Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna. Reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Reading today from the Madhya Lila, chapter 19, verses 168 and 169. I'll read first the Bengali for 168. Anya vancha anya puja charigana karma anakulye savendriye krishna nuya shilana. Translation: a pure devotee must not cherish any other desire than to serve Krishna. He should not offer worship to the demigods or to mundane personalities. He should not cultivate artificial knowledge, which is devoid of Krishna consciousness, and he should not engage himself in anything other than Krishna conscious activities. One must engage all one's purified senses in the service of the Lord. This is the favorable execution of Krishna conscious activities. And today's verse, or the second verse, is text 169. Ei shuddha bhakti iha hoitu prema haya. Pancharatre bhagavate ei lakshane kai. This Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotional service. Iha Hoite, from which? Prema, unalloyed love of Krishna. Haya, there is. Pancharatre, in the Vedic literature, known as the Pancharatras. Bhagavate, also in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Ai, these. Lakshana, symptoms. Kai, are described. Translation: these activities are called Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotional service. If one renders such pure devotional service, he develops his original love of Krishna in due course of time. In Vedic literatures, like the Pancharatras and Srimad Bhagavatam, these symptoms are described. Please repeat. These activities are called Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotional service. If one renders such pure devotional service, he develops his original love of Krishna in due course of time. In Vedic literatures, like the Pancharatras and Srimad Bhagavatam. These symptoms are described. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. One has to develop his devotional service under the directions of a pure devotee, the spiritual master, and in accordance with the Vedic directions given in the Pancharatra and Bhagavatam systems. The Pancharatra system includes methods of temple worship, and the Bhagavatam system includes the spreading of Krishna consciousness philosophy through the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam and the discussion of philosophy with people who are interested. Through discussion, one can create an interest and understanding of the Pancharatra and Bhagavatam systems. I'll read the two verses again. Text 168. A pure devotee must not cherish any other desire than to serve Krishna. He should not offer worship to the demigods or to mundane personalities. He should not cultivate artificial knowledge, which is devoid of Krishna consciousness. And he should not engage himself in anything other than Krishna conscious activities. One must engage all one's purified senses in the service of the Lord. This is the favorable execution of Krishna conscious activities. Text 169. These activities are called Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotional service. If one renders such pure devotional service, he develops his original love for Krishna in due course of time. In Vedic literature like the Pancharatras and Srimad Bhagavatam, these symptoms are described. Omagyana Timurandasa Dhanandana Salakaya Chakshur Militang Dena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpa Turuvyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. When I first looked at this verse, I was horrified. It's about pure devotional service. And I was hoping I could speak on something a little more mundane, of which I have some realization. I will, however, try to speak on something for our benefit on this notion of pure devotional service. I think the whole idea of purity is very much encapsulated in our tradition, whether you talk about our specific tradition, the Gaudiya Vaishnav tradition, or ISKCON specifically, or we talk about the broader Vedic tradition, which is sometimes called Hinduism. The whole idea of purity is an important one. Sometimes if you read books on Hinduism, they talk about ritual purity, which is often enshrined within the caste system. And there is various ways in which purity is compromised, such as eating with the wrong types of people. Marriage is an important case, and we will still see in matrimonial adverts that the parents will want a suitor from a particular caste, a particular, perhaps we would call varna, and even specific jati or family. So it's considered marriage is important for maintaining purity, eating, and therefore in public events the food would be cooked or should be cooked by Brahmins, so it's suitable for everyone. What are the other ways? There are other ways. Physical contact. Of course, it came to such a degree that some Brahmins would be upset if the shadow of one of lower caste touched them. So there's a lot of discussion on ritual purity. However, purity is quite an important theme within our whole ontology, or the way we see the world. It's interesting that we have an interesting symbol in our tradition and in the broader Hindu tradition. These symbols appear repeatedly on our logos, clubs, lotuses, tilak, and so on. But the particular relevant symbol here is the lotus flower. Actually, in my own service in the UK, we have a department called ISKCON Educational Services, and our symbol was the lotus, growing from water. It's a particularly interesting symbol, because some say it represents beauty, and that may be true, but it's also symbolic of purity. What is interesting about the lotus, there are different names in Sanskrit, I think, for lotus, and those of you who are Sanskrit scholars will know more than I do. I'm sure there's quite a number. Perhaps you can tell me some of them. Kamala is one. But the one I was... What other ones do you have without any beginning with P? Are there others? Kamala? Aravinda. Ah, yeah. Aravindaksha. So one with lotus eyes. There may be others. Huh? Padmaja. Padmaja. I don't know. Padmaja. That also means, ja means born, and Padma? Pankaja was the one I was going to mention, which is why I asked for no beginning with P. Pankaja. Punk? What does punk mean? Someone with a funny haircut? Panka means mud. And Pankaja means that which is born of mud. And the symbolism often used is that actually the lotus represents purity, and yet it grows out of the mud. In other words, purity for us often grows out of the mud of human suffering. And that's an interesting theme, which is probably something we can relate to, because being in this world, and we can discuss this, there are varieties of suffering as we know. But also there's another symbolism with the lotus, and that is, the lotus is usually shown above the water. So it also symbolizes transcendence. In Christian terms, the saying would be to be in the world, but not of the world. So how are we in the world, but we're somehow transcendental, despite being situated within this world. So the lotus has some very interesting significance with regards to purity. It's also a symptom of beauty, of course, and Krishna is described very often in terms of the lotus. There's a wonderful verse from Queen Kunti, Namak Pankaja Nabhaya, Namak Pankaja Maline, Namak Pankaja Netraya, Namaste Pankajangraye. A nice verse. Queen Kunti says, my respectful obeisances are unto you, O Lord, whose abdomen is marked with a depression like a lotus flower, who are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, whose glance is as cool as the lotus. It's an interesting metaphor, isn't it? A glance being cool. My wife just got back from India, and she said she did the Brajamandal Parikram. And she said she could understand there why the rays of the moon are described as cooling. and it's considered a very pleasant coolness. After all, here with the weather we have here, it's hard for us to kind of appreciate the coolness of the moon. But here the Krishna's glance is also described as cool as the lotus flower. I mean, I guess that means cool in the sense of not warm, not in the modern sense of cool. As cool as the lotus, and whose feet are engraved with lotuses. So it's of course the eyes are like the lotus petal, that shape. Therefore, Aravindaksha, one who has eyes like the lotus petal, very pleasing. So these are some of the descriptions of beauty, but also purity is being described here. And two types of impurity are being described. And those two types of impurity are also connected to suffering. Also, of course, what is interesting here is mentioned, one should not offer worship to the demigods. So we could also explore this whole issue of worship of the demigods as related to the two types of impurity mentioned here. The first one is karma. Karma means the desire to enjoy this world. The suffering for most of us, I think, is quite clear. And I've got down, there's two types of suffering with regard to karma. There may be a lot more. One is not getting what we want. The second one is getting what we want. You may think that's strange, but but there's one story by one spiritualist. He tells the story about how one gentleman was a psychologist and was visiting an asylum, a mental institution. And he heard from behind this door a gentleman going, "Oh, Lulu, Lulu, Lulu." Lulu is a woman's name. You may know there was a singer called Lulu. I think she's still around. It's a woman's name, Lulu. So he said, "Lulu, Lulu, Lulu." And the psychologist asked the gentleman who was showing around, "What's wrong with this gentleman?" He said, "He was very much in love with this lady called Lulu, and she spurned him. She abandoned him. And he's never been the same." That happens sometimes, actually. Sometimes a person is so attached, they go almost, absolutely. No, it happens sometimes. So they were going around a little, being shown around this institution. And then he came across another cell a little while later and he heard, "Lulu, Lulu, Lulu." So being an intelligent man, he said, obviously this Lulu is a very well-known lady. The same thing happened to him. He said, "Oh, no, 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 no. That's the person Lulu eventually married." Anyway, the point being, sometimes we don't get what we want. Sometimes we do get what we want. The result is never quite satisfactory. I remember reading a book on, it was some kind of management book, and it was about one gentleman who was explaining, he had a great desire to get a house, and he worked very, very hard, top level business. In a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, he bought himself a house, and finally signed the contract, got the house, got the keys, moved into the house, and he sat there weeping. With happiness? No. He felt completely alone in his house. He'd got it. He'd achieved it. But somehow or other, he was still feeling dissatisfied. There's also another well-known story of an Olympic star who was actually got a gold medal, won the Olympics, and was actually shedding tears standing on that middle podium just before getting the gold medal. And everyone thought he was actually overjoyed with actually getting that medal, the gold medal, which she'd been striving for years. But when there was an interview with the press, he revealed, sometime later this was, that actually he was feeling, now he had achieved his goal, a complete emptiness in his life. And perhaps we can identify with that. Sometimes we achieve what we want, and yet it doesn't give us that satisfaction. These are some of the sufferings we have in this life, and we even hear from some people how they seem to be surprised when they get old. Yadananda Maharaj was mentioning that video and how life is very short. And yet we kind of know, and yet we're kind of surprised. So we become somehow disappointed or frustrated with this world. And when we become frustrated, what do we tend to do? Another suffering, we try to renounce. We decide to give it all up. This is no good. So acceptance and rejection. Therefore we see it's prevalent today, isn't it? We get married and then we're not happy. We divorce. Unfortunately, this is the nature of love, isn't it, in this world? Sometimes the affairs between men and women become really acrimonious. A year or two ago, Sir Paul McCartney, as he is, you'll know, he had his second marriage. His first wife died some time ago, and then Linda McCartney, and then he was and there was a whole court case, very, very bitter, very, very nasty. So sometimes this love becomes, so-called love becomes, it shows its real face. And then, of course, we will actually make a whole philosophy about renouncing, and it will become the whole purpose of life. And that is mentioned here. Even though it says we should not cultivate artificial knowledge, and we might be thinking of knowledge in this world, perhaps as we get in a university, a mundane university, actually, Srila Prabhupada is rejecting, or here Lord Chaitanya is rejecting, when speaking to Rupa Goswami, the whole process of Jnana Yoga, which is based on renunciation. One must be renounced. In fact, without becoming a sannyasi, it is still considered in the smarter tradition of Shankaracharya, one has very little scope, generally speaking, am I right? There are some exceptions, I think. But generally speaking, I think the idea is that without becoming a sannyasi, one cannot attain perfection. One will be hopelessly involved in the path of karma or enjoyment. But here, Lord Chaitanya is rejecting that. And the fact is that there's a lot of suffering also involved with the path of jnana. And that's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, I think in the 12th chapter. I think the word is klesha for suffering, 12.5. Klesho diktaras tesham avyakta shakti chetasam avyakta hir gitir dukham dehavadbir avapite. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifest, impersonal feature of the Supreme, Jai Shishi Radha Gopinath, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. Actually, two words are used. Kleshaha, trouble, and dukkham, again, suffering. So that, it's actually an artificial process. It's not possible. The word used in Sanskrit is vimukti manina, which means literally, I think, one thinks one is liberated. I don't know whether you've had the experience, but I have it two or three times. It's happened to me that I'm lying asleep and my alarm clock goes off, and then I dream of putting off my alarm clock and I dream of getting up. I think in my dream I have to hit it a few times to make it go off. Has anyone had that dream here? So we're in a dream. It's described. We're like asleep. We have to wake up. Jeev jago, jeev jago. But vimukti manana, we actually sometimes think that we've woken up. But actually we're still sound asleep. So vimukti manana, it's not real liberation. And Srila Prabhupada is actually very, obviously quite critical of the Mayavad or the Advaita philosophy. And he actually criticizes very often those sannyasis who just, in Kali Yuga, generally a sannyas is someone who's a failure in married life. He's very critical of that. And he gives the example of Lord Chaitanya, who had a very beautiful wife, an affectionate mother. He was well-renowned as a scholar. Perhaps by Western standards, we don't actually appreciate the material situation or the apparent material situation he was in. But actually, at least by Indian or Vedic or Hindu, whatever standards, his life was extremely good. It's even said, of course, I think it's Chanakya says, if you don't have an affectionate mother or a loving wife, you should leave home, because the home is as good as the forest anyway. Just like that gentleman sitting in the house. It was a house, but it wasn't a home. But Lord Chaitanya had all those opulences. Of course, he's the Supreme Lord, and still he renounced. So Srila Prabhupada says on one lecture, he says, his sannyas has meaning. It means something. So there's a kind of tension, isn't there, in the human form of life between trying to enjoy and also trying to renounce. Or understanding the need to renounce. Understanding the difficulties associated with material enjoyment. Even the non-devotees understand smoking is bad. And therefore there's a huge conflict within them very often. I want to give it up, but I cannot give it up. And therefore I think they have all kinds of means to take nicotine. I think they have patches or something we put on. You can get artificial cigarettes that you take in the nicotine. It's such a frustrating existence. And this is the human form of life, really. We actually want to enjoy, but somehow or other, it is clear that we can't do that. We can't do that. Pashyanapi na pashyati. We see that even though I'm attached to family life, but I see that my grandparents have both died. My parents have died or will die soon. We know that. And we know that our children will die. But still, na pashyati. We can't see. Why not? Because we actually are addicted to this pleasure, and it is hard for us to see that. Therefore, when we hear this, very often a person becomes angry. If we hear the truth, we become angry. It upsets us. Because we think we've got to give up. Often we think we've got to give up. And that doesn't sit well with the soul, because we want to be happy. That's the fact. And Srila Prabhupada mentions very clearly in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, the living entity is by nature pleasure-seeking, anandamoya. We are now suffering because we are falsely seeking pleasure on the material platform, and as a result we are becoming entangled in the painful complexities of material existence. But if we try to give up the pleasure-seeking propensity altogether, we shall eventually become frustrated and return to the platform of material pleasure-seeking. Although there is eternal existence on the Brahman platform of impersonal realization, there is no real ananda. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. Srila Prabhupada was not averse to quoting popular wisdom when it was appropriate. What does he say again? Variety is the mother of enjoyment. In the Vaikuntha planets, there is actual spiritual ananda. Krishna is there in his ecstatic spiritual form, surrounded by his blissful associates, and all of them eternally full of bliss and knowledge. They have nothing to do with material existence. In the spiritual planets, even the scenery and the birds and the animals are fully conscious of Krishna and are absorbed in transcendental bliss. Yad gatva na nivartante tad dharma paramang mama. Bhagavad Gita chapter 15 verse number 6. One who goes back to the blissful spiritual planet of Krishna will be fully satisfied and never come back to this material platform. Therefore Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has said, Kim chatra bhaktai sangsara bandhana betavyam. Only the bhakta actually becomes free from fear. So only by bhakti. It's a very scientific process. It's not just a question of we're saying our path is better than others. That's easily done, isn't it, in religion? But we should try and understand why. Why is bhakti better? Here, even though pure bhakti is being described, at the end of the second translation, at the end of the purport to the second verse, Srila Prabhupada says something interesting. Through discussion, one can create an interest and understanding of the Pancharatra and Bhagavata systems. So there has to be also some understanding, must be there. There's a whole discussion on what is the relationship of knowledge to Krishna consciousness. Of course, it's said here, artificial knowledge devoid of Krishna consciousness. So there's a tension in the human form of life. We're trying to enjoy, but we understand the material, the nature of this world. And we tend to flip between accepting and rejecting. And sometimes we make those into whole philosophies. So in philosophy, what's the philosophy of enjoyment called? Hedonism. Yeah, some have actually, and we have our own hedonistic philosophy. Yes, Charvaka Muni. Not ours, it's actually been rejected by the Vedic tradition generally. But, Srila Prabhupada quotes Charvaka Muni. He even, in some sense, gives him some credit. Because Charvaka Muni says, beg, borrow, or steal, get ghee. Because with ghee, which is much cheaper in the UK than it is here, we can enjoy life. Why? With ghee you can cook. Actually, the Brahmins, it's mentioned somewhere in the Bhagavatam, there's cooked food and uncooked food, which Srila Prabhupada mentions. Uncooked food means food without ghee. We've got a high standard. And cooked food means food that's actually cooked with ghee. And in a proper feast, there should be cooked food with ghee. And ghee is also used in the karma, we're talking about karma, and Gana. In karma, for the karma kanda section, then ghee is important to offer the yajna into the sacred fire. so that we can actually attain the heavenly planets, and then hopefully our ancestors, our sons, our Pitri, and so the Aputra, one who delivers us from hell. If they keep on offering those yajnas, this is how I understand it, you scholars may correct me, if your forefathers keep on offering these yajnas, then you can stay up there in the heavenly planets for a long, or practically perpetually, I think. But of course, one's got to make sure that all the generations of your family carry on. That is the. But ghee is needed, so therefore ghee is considered so. And also in lamps, of course, ghee was used in the temple lamps. So ghee was very important. So Charvaka Muni says, beg, borrow, or steal, but get ghee. Srila Prabhupada comments, he wasn't mentioning animal fat or meat. He's referring to a vegetarian diet. So even as a hedonist, there were some qualities there. So that's one side we want to enjoy. The other side is that as human beings, we are not like animals in the sense that all of us are endowed with some knowledge. In the mode of passion, even though knowledge is really should be there in goodness. What's the mode of passion? Knowledge in the mode of passion means one is aware of the consciousness within the body. That's the human form of life. One is aware there is a self. However, somewhat different from the body, but one tends to see different selves in different bodies. Generally, it tends to be more identified with the mind in the mode of passion. We identify the self with the mind. And we differentiate. Does that make sense? We differentiate. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the mode of goodness, we see the same Pandita Samadarshina. We see the same living being in all species of life. And in ignorance, no empathy. Absolutely none. I perform all kinds of sinful acts, and I just have no understanding that I've mentioned this before, but some criminals, they just do not understand that what I have done is caused suffering. They don't get it. There's just no perception of it. Tamas. Ignorance. So in the mode of passion, human life, there is some perception. In the animal species, karma. We can enjoy and there's no understanding of the suffering, but there's no understanding. There's not an ability to reflect on that. But the human being is in this difficult situation, this dilemma, where he or she understands, wants to enjoy, but has some perception of the suffering of life. So how to resolve that tension? That is resolved through the process of bhakti. No more karma and no more jnana either. Or renunciation. No need. Everything can be accepted or rejected on the basis of service to Krishna. And therefore, bhakti has resolved this dilemma that is there intrinsically for the human being. On one side, we have the romantic who is interested in enjoying this world and love. And we know when men, particularly, and sometimes ladies, fall in love, they lose their good sense. Yeah? Sometimes that we see, couple get together, everyone says it's not a good relationship, your moons are in the wrong nakshatras. But somehow they're so, that bond, that attraction is so strong, that so-called love. love is blind, thank you. Yeah, and sometimes it's fatal, the femme fatale. And also the homme fatale, I guess. Excuse me. Sorry, we can't be two-sided on this. Yeah? Yeah? It happens. Yeah. Yeah. I was reading in the newspaper, a gentleman, we actually married a rich man, a rich lady. He told, sorry, excuse me, you never know what happens these days. A gentleman, a man, married this rich lady. He was telling his friends, he was quoted saying, she's as ugly as hell, but she's stinking rich. And he eventually killed her. Yeah. So she was thinking, here is someone to protect me, to cherish me, to love me, but he killed her. That's on one side. We become romantic. But on the other side, when we hear these things, we become cynical. That's the opposite approach, that it all has no value, this love, these feelings, and so on. Therefore, simply the path of gyan, philosophy. But cynicism doesn't work either. And sometimes we find that when we become, try to renounce, but we're not quite on that platform, we become hard-hearted, bitter, and we start to project on others and see faults. Sometimes we project onto other people, especially if we become, you know, we're actually somehow frustrated with life. I've given up everything, and then we become critical of those who have wealth or prosperity. It's easily done. And we can, oh, look at that wealth. He's filthy rich, we say. Filthy rich. We become envious. That means also we're not on that platform of purity. So this artificial renunciation will not work. We start to project. I was in Japa today, and a couple of devotees were having a bit of a chat there, and I was thinking, why aren't they listening to their japa? They're not listening to their japa. Why are they not listening to their japa? They're not listening to their japa. Of course, who wasn't listening to his japa? And it's interesting, in regards to purity, even though here is mentioned some of the processes for being purified, which is deity worship and recitation of the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada explains in one place what will be the sign of our love for him. He said, your love for me will be shown. It's much quoted, I know, but it's profound. By your ability to cooperate and not to create factions. So this is a sign, we could say, of purity. When actually we have that ability to work together and not to create different factions, different groups or parties. And we'll hear later in this chapter how actually the basis of factions is identification with the body. So when we become purified, we give up that identification with the body. Two symptoms are mentioned. No longer do we identify with the body, and also the senses and the mind and the intelligence become purified. Yesterday, Yadananda Swami mentioned we have to give up mundane intelligence, but in another sense, the intelligence, the mind, everything has to be purified, because the soul is naturally sentient, it has senses, it has everything. This description here of the spiritual world is very rich. It's a full life. Some while ago I had a little argument with someone, because they were saying that Krishna consciousness is simple. And I didn't like that word. And it's true, in a way it is. But in another sense, Krishna consciousness is extremely rich and fulfilling. Everything is there in the spiritual world. There are big parties in the spiritual world. And it's described like that. One is fully satisfied. Without that satisfaction, one can't become happy. Therefore, the process of karma and the process of jnana, they won't actually fully satisfy the heart. But one of the symptoms is that when we're satisfied, we can work cooperatively. Therefore, this process of purification is very scientific. And actually, of course, Rupa Goswami then gave nine stages or seven, beginning with Shraddha? Nine, thank you, nine stages. It's extremely scientific. It may be based on love. It may have that very important emotional, if you like, component, but actually it is extremely scientific. And particularly important, of course, for us, after Bhajana Kriya is Anatta Nivritti, we have to begin to purify the heart of these anathas, these unwanted things. And that is very practical, because as soon as we live in the association of devotees, or near devotees in a community like this, then immediately those anathas become manifest. Isn't it true? And we have to deal practically with those. We see in ourselves, oh, that was the wrong thing to do. Mm-hmm. We feel it. We know. Krishna gives us guidance when there's something that happens. So the whole process is actually of becoming purified in the association of devotees. These are just some thoughts about becoming purified. Here, of course, it's resolved also by making the clear statement that actually bhakti has to be authorized. That is pure devotional service. Even though in one sense purity is about that heart becoming eventually completely clean, it is also one is a pure devotee as one takes to that practice according to the authorized system. So Srila Prabhupada gives two definitions of pure devotee. He gives the example of the doctor. He says, if you're a trainee doctor, you will be called doctor. And if you carry on through university or medical school, eventually you will be a doctor. However, if you drop out midway, you're no longer called doctor, and it's considered you never were a doctor. So he gives that example to explain the two meanings of the word pure devotee. One is someone who's on that path according to the authorized system, and also the second meaning is one who has actually become pure of all those desires. And these two desires are there, karma and jnana. And in a sense, bhakti resolves that human tension between the tendency to enjoy or karma, and the tendency to renounce, which is generally associated with the path of jnana. It resolves that tension. Therefore, there is a certain happiness in devotional service that you cannot experience elsewhere. And that happiness can come by eating, for example, Krishna prasad. And we're not thinking about prasadam, all we've got to eat, because it's there. That is real. That is real. That is happening, and that is spiritual. So the mind can then be fixed on Krishna. Otherwise, the process is very difficult. If anyone who's tried to fast for, I once tried to do the full Ekadashi. I've only ever done it once, and actually we went to Bhakti Churu Maharaj afterwards because we were attending a course in Vrindavan. And we explained what our consciousness had been throughout the whole evening. He said, don't bother fasting all night. Because we'd been dreaming of puris and sweet rice. And it rained that night. And just to stay awake, we were dragging our feet through puddles to try and stay awake. And he said, if you're not thinking of Krishna, then ultimately your austerities have little benefit, actually. Of course, it may be that there is some struggle. We can't follow the mind completely. There has to be some struggle during japa and so on. We have to try and pull the mind back. But ultimately, if our mind isn't going to Krishna, if there isn't some development of love and affection, which is really the means by which the mind can focus on an object, then it is actually a waste of time. Questions or comments, please? Gopal Hari Prabhu. It may not start off as pure. We may actually think Ram will give me some pleasure, but ultimately one will be actually inclined to give up any feeling of pleasure for the. That's love. You're prepared to give up anything, so one will be prepared to even give up that pleasure. But it's kind of intelligent in the beginning to think that actually if I want happiness, I should approach Krishna. And, you know, in a sense, it's not wrong to have one's self-interest at heart. Nate vidu svagatahin hi Vishnu. You know, to understand what is my real self-interest. That's not wrong. In fact, it's those who are karmis and ganis are not really interested in their self-interest. Why? Icha dvesha samadvena dvandva mohena bharata. We don't want to serve Krishna. Out of spite. That's really the motivation. I'm not going to serve Krishna. I remember meeting one gentleman on Sankirtan in Ireland many years ago, probably in the 70s, and he said to me, "I hate God. My brother died very young," and he related a few more calamities, "I hate God." So there's this dvesha, this aversion to the Supreme Lord and to his service. And therefore it's hard to hear Bhagavatam. But as soon as someone goes blah, 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 they may be talking about Krishna, blah, 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 rasa mandala, then immediately, are they talking about me? Because we want to put ourselves at the center. That's natural. But even if we put ourselves at the center with intelligence and say, what is my real self-interest? Even if we say, I want to be really happy, I want to enjoy like anything, why not? That's our nature, anandamoya vyasat. But just be intelligent about it. That's all. Can't negate that. So actually the materialist doesn't have that self-interest at heart. Even though we say they're selfish, but still, that doesn't really mean genuine self-interest. And we find sometimes people neglect ourselves. Srila Prabhupada warns against that. We shouldn't be neglectful about looking after even our physical, our mind and our body. We shouldn't. It's not a process of neglect. That's usually irresponsible. On the pure, completely pure level, one may have no concern for these things. But we shouldn't imitate that level. We should, we've got this body, we've got this mind, it's up to us to look after it. No one else has, Krishna's given it to us. Will you look after my mind for me, Prabhu? No, it's our responsibility. But ultimately, love means, it becomes distasteful after a while. And actually, that's part of the problem. My experience is, for all my shortcomings, which are many, is that actually those anarthas become very distasteful after a while. We see them and they're ugly. Ugly. Here, purity and beauty are together. But impurity becomes very ugly. And in fact, the various ugly species of life are, manifestations of that aversion to Krishna. So, a cockroach body or whatever. Imagine what it looks like if you're a cockroach. So purity and beauty. It's so nice being in the association of devotees, isn't it? Because there's that purity there. Otherwise it's troublesome. One never knows what's in the heart and what may come out. When one may be attacked. One final question. Yeah. Yeah. Yoga is somewhere in, generally considered somewhere in between jnana and bhakti. But that also has to be renounced, particularly the aspiration for siddhi, perfection, or even for detachment. Actually, knowledge, there's knowledge and detachment. So even for detachment, that idea, I'm going to become detached, must be given up as well. Because you can't become detached. It's not possible. Detached from material things, yes, but completely detached, not possible. It's a waste of time. If one's yoga is aimed at Krishna, and actually if you look at the yoga system, if you look at the five yamas and niyamas, I think one of the five, they're the five, they're the two preliminary, the two of the eight stages, then what's it called? Isha pra, worship of the Lord is one of the five yamas, or the don'ts. Niyamas, one of the five niyamas, the five things you should do, the do's. The fifth one is worship of the Supreme Lord. You can't get away from it. Even in the yoga system, if you want success there, there's some recognition of the Supreme. And if you look at, you know, even look at Shankara, there's recognition of Govinda. you can't actually exclude God. Even in these processes, actually. Rather, the culmination of karma, in a sense, we reject them. But in another sense, the culmination of karma is activities for Krishna. The culmination of jnana is knowledge and perception of the Lord. And the culmination of the yoga system is samadhi, complete fixing of the mind out of love for Krishna. It's the perfection of the yoga processes. Is it a question or is it a comment? Because I only want a question. Jai Nitai Gaur. Good. And I'll answer in 1 or 2 minutes. Engraved. Is that what it says? Where's my notes? It says engraved. Wow. What's the actual? I've lost my notes. What's the actual quote? Which part is the engraved with the his navel? I mean generally engraved means there's a person kind of with a machine. I don't think it's like that. I think engraved refers to the kind of an indent when you engrave things. There's a kind of impression. So I think the meaning means that actually there's a kind of an indent within the navel. I don't know exactly. If anyone's got more knowledge of Krishna's navel, please let me know. But I think that's what it means. That actually there's a kind of impression, just like you've got lines in your hand. It's like, you know, it's a little bit is taken out, as it were. I assume that's what it means. But by the process of devotional service, one day we will actually have darshan of the Supreme Lord. That's also a lotus. There's lots of lotuses in our tradition. But I'm not sure of the actual meaning of engrave. But anyway, that's just some discussion of purity and the two types of impurity, kam, the tendency towards karma and the tendency towards jnana. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai, Kaura Premanandi, Hare Krishna.